welcome to this Touch podcast activity, which has been recorded for Touch Neurology. In this series of podcasts, a multidisciplinary team of specialists, plus a former care partner, share their perspectives on the impact and behavioural symptoms of agitation in Alzheimer's dementia, including discussion on diagnosis criteria and best practice management. This activity is funded by an independent medical education grant from Lundbeck. This activity is jointly provided by USF Health and Touch IME in collaboration with the Gerontological Society of America, GSA. In this podcast, a geriatric psychiatrist, a cognitive neurologist, and a nurse practitioner discuss the criteria for diagnosis of agitation in Alzheimer's dementia. Plus, a former care partner shares her insights on the challenges of diagnosis.
Hello and welcome. Today in this section, my colleagues and I will be discussing how to recognize and diagnose agitation associated with Alzheimer's disease dementia. I'm Dr. George Grossberg. I'm a geriatric psychiatrist at St. Louis University School of Medicine, St. Louis, Missouri, here in the U.S. of A. And to discuss this important topic, I'm extremely happy to be joined by my friend and colleague, Dr. Ali Atri, who is a cognitive neurologist at Banner Sun Health Research Institute, also in the U.S. Welcome, Ali.
Thanks, George.
And we have Ms. Susan Scanlon, who I've also had the pleasure of working with on a number of occasions. She's a true expert, a gerontologic nurse practitioner, and a founder of Dementia Connection. Welcome, Susan.
Thank you, George. Thank you.
We're also joined by Dr. Bonnie Berman. Bonnie is a very special person. She's going to bring a different perspective as a former care partner for her mother-in-law, who is living with dementia of the Alzheimer's type. She's also president of the Ohio Council for Cognitive Health. So welcome to all of you.
Thank you, George.
All right. Great to have you. So in this segment, as I mentioned, we're going to talk about the early behavioral symptoms of agitation and Alzheimer's dementia, and also focus on kind of criteria for diagnosis. And one of the things that we know is that it's difficult to diagnose agitation, whether in the office setting or even in the long-term care environment at times. It's a kind of a complex situation. Often care partners may not use the term agitation. They may not even share behavioral concerns with the primary clinician. So I'm wondering, maybe Susan, if you could kind of start us off and talk about kind of different presentations that you've kind of seen and about the difficulties of making this diagnosis.
Sure. My background has been largely long-term care and also home community. The initial symptoms are often very vague and kind of what we'd say prodromal. They may start off as restlessness, irritability, short-tempered, and often, healthcare providers may not see that as agitation of Alzheimer's disease. We also have issues of family members too. As George had mentioned, a lot of times people don't even connect any of these, early symptoms with Alzheimer's disease. They may just think, oh, that's just my loved one, being cranky. I'm sure he's tired of being at home. Thought he was being belligerent. And they don't also often use the terminology that we use as far as, the exact terms of agitation and dementia. They might say things like, oh, they're having a meltdown. They're frantic. So we're seeing both the care partner and the person with the symptoms responding to these very early changes, but they're often subtle and usually not recognized.
Well, thank you for that. So of course we encourage, the family, the care partners, and literally every visit with the healthcare provider to talk about any behavior change, anything that's different from the way the person usually is. Now, once we do recognize that agitation may be a problem or may be in the picture, very, very important. And Ali, maybe you can talk about the importance of a thorough differential diagnosis so that we shouldn't just automatically assume that the agitated behavior is coming from the underlying Alzheimer's dementia.
That's correct, George. I think, you know, one of the major things that we have is the International Psychogeriatric Association consensus diagnosis, which involves, you know, a patient who has a cognitive disorder, MCI, or dementia syndrome, you know, that they're exhibiting one of these spectrum behaviors, you know, excessive motor activity or verbal aggression or physical aggression has been going on for, you know, a couple of weeks, and it's a dramatic change from their usual behavior. And it's then affecting other domains, such as, you know, causing emotional distress, interfering with interpersonal relationships, social functioning, engagement in ADLs. They're stressful and severe. And the point here is that, you know, it's not something that you can really attribute to a medical condition. Or another psychiatric condition. So when you mention the differential is really important. So you think about, well, are they not sleeping well? Could this be an issue? Is there pain going on? Is there constipation? Is there another medical illness? So in women, oftentimes in later stages, difficulty with wiping can cause, you know, UTIs. Could there be a pneumonia or a brewing? And some of these things don't show their symptoms, you know, other than the patient becoming sort of irritable, agitated. Is there a electrolyte issue? Are they dehydrated? You know, high sugar, low sugar? Medications, are there new medications that have been put on board? For example, some that they're withdrawing from, for example, are there anticholinergic medications? Is there too much use of alcohol, for example? Are they forgetting? And then thinking about the environment, environmental triggers, and all the other things that are less under the control of the patient themselves and may have changed. Everything from to just the not right environment for the patient, too hot, too cold, too stimulating, et cetera.
Yeah, so that's very helpful. And I guess just to remind all of us that though agitation is extremely common, particularly with disease progression and Alzheimer's dementia, there are many, many other potential triggers. And this is a vulnerable population, and we need to be thinking about those and trying to address those as well. So just your thoughts, Bonnie, do you have any reactions at this point in time from your perspective as having been a care partner for your mother-in-law?
I actually do, George. I found the conversation very enlightening, because what Ali was talking about was how the multidisciplinary team needs to be detectives. And I have a Sherlock Holmes hat here, and I put it on all the time when I say, we've got to figure out what's going on. The multidisciplinary team can only be really good detectives if they have all the information. And so involving the care partner in the early stages as part of the care team becomes so very important, because the information you want often is not going to be shared. And the first reason it's not going to be shared is the stigma, that we don't want people to know that grandpa is doing this or what's happening. But the second and the really important one to me is care partners often think, why are they doing this to me? Why are they trying to get back at me? And they don't realize that this is not about them. And so we're actually dealing with family relationships here. And so it's really important for the team to involve the care partner to get all of this information to be able to act and react appropriately.
I think that's very, very helpful. Just to add to that, Bonnie, one of the things I've found with families is they're often reluctant to bring behavioral issues up, because often the patient's there. So in our setting, we see the patient and the family in the office together. So they may, in fact, approach me before the visit or sometime thereafter, but usually before, asking for a couple of minutes privately so they can talk about these behaviors and not talk about them in front of the patient. As then maybe they'll get even more agitated, or it's embarrassing, or they're kind of reluctant to do that. And I think that's very appropriate. I do want to get your insights, Susan, also in this area, and particularly the concept of the multidisciplinary team and utilizing the more specific kind of IPA criteria. Do you have any thoughts about that?
Yes, you know, it's great because we can use the IPA criteria to guide us. As George and I have developed a decision tree, and this is available through Gerontological Society of America, through GSA, on geron.org. And what we did was we kind of looked at that criteria, and we you know, listened to the family first. And from there, we, you know, it's good to try to define, as Ali just explained, is it delirium? Is it dementia? Is it depression? And we do actually, the whole team looks and assesses, and it's so important in a team setting, like in a nursing home or an assisted living or a hospital even, for us to get that information, as Bonnie said. Gather it from multiple sources. And even in my rounds in long-term care, I was highly dependent on certified nursing assistants being with the residents all the time. You know, is the patient able to participate in recreation therapy? What information does the social worker get from the family as far as, you know, what's the history? Often we get not full charts when in long-term care settings or in home settings with primary care providers. So basically, we're using that criteria, and then we're going to assess, and we have specific tools, nurse practitioners, PAs, medical directors, primary care physicians. And if those patients are fortunate to have access to wonderful experts like George and Ali, you know, getting them in for that full workup. So we then try to say, you know, let's try some non-pharmacological interventions. And the whole staff and family members are very involved with that. You know, we recommend things like, you know, we'll talk about that again a little further down. We have interventions we can do, and we see if they work. We use assessment tools. The clinicians can use the neuropsych inventory. Cohen-Mansfield inventory has a lot of symptoms that both Ali and George have discussed. So we see, do they respond to our intervention, maybe a non-pharmacologic intervention? If they did, great. If not, we reevaluate again with those tools. And, you know, and then we take management from there.
Thank you, Susan, for those insights. I want to thank all of our guests for a great segment, and I look forward to working with you in the future. Thank you all.
Thanks, George. Yeah. Thanks, Steve.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this Touch podcast. You can access more content on this topic on Touch Neurology at www.touchneurology.com. Don't forget there are 4 other chapters in this series, so please listen in for further insights from the multidisciplinary team.